And I usually come in and do things about marriage or relationships, and so I'm doing that again, but I've got some fresh material, so hopefully, I know you've heard me talk about this before, so I'm changing around a little bit. And usually, Diane, my wife, doesn't get to do these relationship classes like this, so I'm a little bit intimidated by having her here. I have to be honest, I guess, about life and marriage and such. Oh, okay. All right. So I've got 24 points. 12 this week, 12 next week, if it all goes according to plan, and if it doesn't, that's okay too. But first, I wanted to ask you, let's see, a brave volunteer, where were you living and what were you doing the first year of your marriage? Where were you living and what were you doing the first year of marriage? Anybody? I mean, this is not that intimidating and hard. Anybody want to share on that? Larry?
I was working at Lowe's Hardware just down the street, and we were both in school. And we were living in Goodlettsville. Just right off Conference Drive.
All right.
But I had to think, that's a long time ago by now. That's way back.
Okay. And Julie, what were you doing that year?
We were both in school, and we were both working full time, and we ate a lot of macaroni and cheese because we were really poor. Ramen noodles. Macaroni and cheese, a lot of macaroni and cheese. Right. It was good, though. When I think back on that first year, it makes me smile.
You know, which actually brings up a point. They say the first year of marriage is the hardest. Year one and then year seven. There's something about seven. Maybe kind of the newness is worn off or something. There really is something about the seven-year itch that's been validated. There are more divorces in the seventh year than any other year. But you've passed that marker, so that's good. Okay, anybody else? Your first year of marriage, and what were you doing, and where were you?
First year, we lived in Benton City in Washington, and I worked at Vance Nuclear Fuels. And what was the other question?
What were you doing? Well, you're telling us. So.
Yeah, just working.
Okay. Was it a good year or a hard year?
I think it was a good year. It was an easy year.
All right.
Yeah, it was. It was a great year.
All right. Most people will say it's really a hard year because of all the adjustments you make. Like you're living with somebody and they've got their weirdness and you've got your weirdness and you're bringing it together. But, yeah, it can be a good year.
When you're going through it, it probably is really hard. When you look back on it after
30 years. Yeah, it doesn't seem so hard. Jeff?
You said the first year.
Uh-huh.
First year, we lived up in off of Graycroft at Graycroft Condos up there, and Darlene worked for an apartment complex that we moved out of for a while, and then I was working as a youth minister at Trinity Lane Church of Christ. It's no longer there, but it was there then.
Very interesting. I remember when you lived on Port, when you moved there. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, good. Good. Good enough. A little icebreaker. Let's go ahead and start here. Here we go. First point. See if you agree with this. If you want to change your mate, you better change yourself first, because you cannot change your mate. People try. They yell, they scream, they manipulate, all the different things that they get other people to try to do to change. It really doesn't work, or it's just a very short-lasting solution. But for anything that's going on with you, you have to look at what am I doing that contributes to the issue. Or whatever it is, you have control over that. You can change, not the other person. It's really a biblical principle, dealing with the plank in your own eye before you deal with the speck in another person's eye. So anybody want to comment on this? Now, this is a life changer if you take it seriously. Anything that's going on, you look at yourself first. And you can pray for your mate to change, but you can't do anything by direct operation to make it happen. You have a thought? You're just standing there looking? Okay. Anybody have a thought on that? Okay. Now, there's good news in that, too, because if you really see a family as a system, then if you change, then the other person inevitably has to change. It's theoretically, if you change something, you've been in a routine, then they have to change something too. And hopefully it's in the direction where the change needs to go. You see the hope in that? Okay, number two. Outside forces have shaped your relationship. You may think that they have not, and sometimes even without your permission, outside forces shape your relationship. Circumstances do impact, but still, you have to figure out, how can I be strong on the inside? How can I be more like a thermostat and not a thermometer? A thermostat, you set the temperature, you stay at 68, no matter what's going on, and hopefully you're influencing, where a thermometer, it just fluctuates according to whatever's going on. Be a thermostat here. But yes, outside forces contribute. Now, I'm throwing this in. I've done a lot of pre-marriage counseling over the years, and the whole idea of traditional marriage is slipping away, for good or bad. But most young couples now call themselves egalitarians, which means you equally share, you equally decision make, and that sounds good. But still, there are issues about who's in charge around here. The traditional is, well, the man is in charge. The egalitarian is, well, we'll work it out. And maybe you'll be in charge of this and I'll be in charge of that. But there's a cultural clash now because traditional marriage is on the outs with younger people. So what do you think about that? Thoughts?
People,
oh, exactly.
Right. Two incomes. Hey, we both make the same. Right. Or we're, hey, yeah. I make more, or she makes less, or she makes more.
Our lifestyle has made an impact upon that. Yeah. Where two people are working, and we feel like two people have to work, and equal voices in it all. Where in the past, it was not so much. But I have to say, as you look in Ephesians and Colossians and 1 Peter, male leadership of the home is still there. It's the principle that is there. So we can't walk away from that, and we don't want to walk away from that. But in any relationship where there's someone looking upon themselves as the superior one, that doesn't work. We're equal in God's eyes. We know this, male and female. I'm old school, and I still say male leadership in the home. And thankfully, Diane does not fight me on that. You don't, do you? No, she's of that opinion, too. Yeah, so I'm not having to battle that, like so many other people do that have grown up in a traditional setting. So this is a big topic, but most young couples, they have to kind of figure it out now because there aren't the traditional rules that I grew up with. Like, okay, like the man goes to work and the woman stays home and takes care of the children. The whole world has shifted now. Men like to see themselves still, and I think I'm right in this, as the protector and a provider, if not the provider. But men don't feel good about themselves unless they can protect and contribute and provide. So we'd like to do that, protect and provide. The goal of marriage, I don't have this one written on here, but if I had to say, what is your goal? It's intimacy. It's closeness, emotional, physical. It's like two become one. That was God's original intent. So besides just the logistics of maintaining a household together, the goal is, let's be close. Let's build that type of relationship. Let me give you a few little practical thoughts right here before I move on. Build up the trust by not hiding anything from your spouse, like no secrets. No secrets.
Not even your Facebook password?
Exactly. Now, exactly. Like anything, they need to have access to your phone or computer. And if they want to, they can. Now, I recognize in some work settings you can't do that because of confidentiality. But you don't need to be hiding anything secret from your spouse. And you need to think of yourselves in terms of not just I want to do this, but we together are going to do this. And you don't want to be a bone digger. By that, things that have happened in the past that you've agreed, that you've forgiven, then you don't dig that back up. So my job has been working with couples throughout the years, and there's a lot of bone digging going on, and it's not fair. Because once you say it's forgiven in the past, it's forgiven and in the past, and it's not free to be brought up again unless it's really not resolved. And I guess that's why people bring it up again. In theory, in reality, it's not resolved. All right, here's another one. Realize that you're going to have some oopses along the road. And when that happens, then forgiveness before the sun goes down is a biblical principle. Like you have bad days, I have bad days. And when you need to ask for forgiveness, do. And the other big thing is the other person needs to receive the forgiveness offer. A lot of people are still so mad they won't forgive. Please forgive me, please forgive me. No, I know it's a process. But you need to have the spirit of willingness to forgive, at least, and be working on that.
I think that kind of makes it very important of who you've chosen to yoke yourself with, right? That if you're both Christians, I mean, if one of you is a Christian, you both should be Christians, right?
Well, that's the key, finding the right person to start with. But the problem is a lot of people did not. And then problems come. Yes, try. And that's why some of the best advice I ever heard was from Liz Henderson here, who said, be sure you're with a person through all the seasons of life before you make that ultimate commitment where you will see them. You know, talking not just spring, winter, summer, fall, but all the good times and bad times, make sure that they match you.
So that means like a wedding, a funeral, a dog that dies.
Yes, anything. Make
Christmas
sure
that, and Thanksgiving with the family.
Yeah, that. Holidays, how that's going to play out. Yeah, right. Okay, and here's something I don't do. Diane Wilson. Well, we used to have pizza and a movie night, but here it is. Set aside one evening a week for a date night. Wise couples do that. Now, I know when children get involved, it gets more complicated here.
Even handicapped children make it even more complicated.
Yes. Yeah. But if you can figure out, I mean, now that Diane and I are on our own, I guess every night is date night. So, yeah. She's shocked by that. That's not quite true. Yeah. Okay. How did we do about date night?
Not the greatest. Like
not the great. Yeah, that's why I say that. Not
okay,
the greatest.
Okay, I was asking you to look up this new movie I heard about on the Christian Radio Network, First Responders, and it's only going to be showing Monday, tomorrow, and Tuesday in different theaters. And I thought we could go to that. I can't do it Monday, but I could do it
Tuesday. She's
putting
me on the spot here. Okay.
But it's based, it has a Christian bent to it. And they said, come out and support it. Movies are extremely expensive to make. And to get movies with the Christian basis there, they need to be supported. So
okay, maybe
I still
Tuesday.
Haven't heard from you whether
you're
we're
right.
Going
I'm supposed
not.
To check on that. Yes.
Persistence, I like it.
Yes. I know I cannot Monday night, but Tuesday night is a possibility.
She's chasing you.
Oh, gosh. Me. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Okay. Accountability here. Okay. In our society, it can do damage to our relationships because of how even men and women are portrayed in the media, and I don't want to track through this a whole lot, but men are typically presented, married men, as buffoons, and women are the ones who figure it out and make it right. So what is your image of married life? I never saw a husband-wife relationship. I was clueless about how are you supposed to be married to somebody, being raised in a single family. But how do you picture it? Fun, exciting, and intimate, or toxic, boring, and non-permanent? I mean, what's deep in your psyche will kind of play out. So hopefully you saw something positive that you want to emulate. And a lot of people will say, well, no, I don't want a marriage like what my mom and dad had. But here's the issue that's embedded in your mind, and it's easy to go down that road again, even if you don't want to. But you have to think through, what do I need to bring over with me into my marriage that I saw positive, and what do I need to eliminate? So which leads to number three, yeah. Your parents' marriage lives on in you for good or bad. Like in some homes where there hasn't been much give and take or conflict, a partner just kind of learns to hide with the idea of let's not have any conflict and this it'll always go your way because I don't want to get anything stirred up because that's how I saw my dad live with my mom. I just won't rock the boat and live like that. Well, there are a lot of different scenarios that we saw played out in family life. And you'll have to kind of decide what is good and what is not so good. So thoughts on that? So, yes. Yes, sir. Mr. Microphone Man is coming your way.
I think ultimately it's a matter of deciding, is it worth even being an issue? Is it that important to make it an issue?
Right. Excellent thought. Is it worth making it an issue, or can I just let it go and should just let it go? And I think in mature marriages, there's a lot of just letting go, too. It's not worth it. Yeah. And the only warning I'd add with that is if it starts building a resentment, then you've got to deal with it because the resentments kill relationships. So if something is deep within you that's a resentment, that needs to be dealt with, or it eats away at your life together. Okay, number four. Well, your self-worth matters too. If you have a healthy self-worth, you seek out someone who is good to you, treats you well, and you won't put up with ill treatment. For people with poor self-esteem, they take a lot, because deep down, maybe they don't even think they're worth it. So put this little formula. If you have a half a person and a half a person, really you don't get one whole person. It's more of a multiplier, like a broken person and a broken person become less than one full person, even less than they are. So you're wanting to look for somebody who is strong emotionally and spiritually, and so you can be two fully functioning people and put them together. I think that's what the Lord means by, you know, a complementary relationship. You've got strengths, I've got strengths. You do some things a lot better than me, I do some things better than you. Let's put them together and we'll even be stronger as a couple. But a lot of young couples, they're not thinking like that. It's kind of a lust-driven relationship that is starting, but you need to be thinking like 20 years down the road, what is this going to be like together? So you work on being strong, and the other person, let them be strong too. Thoughts on that? Okay, next. Okay, don't settle for blah. Most people, when they're asked, is your marriage the way you thought it would be, most honestly say no, with kind of a little negative twinge to that. Like, no, I mean, it never is quite what you envision. But for some people, it really has become like a total blahness. Like, the first reason, just the romance has died, because there are too many things to do in life, too many things to keep up with. We're all about just trying to make it through the day. And here is the number one people say, what people say at the end of the day, whether it's the man or the woman. You know the number one thing they say? That's it. I'm tired. Bo, I'm tired. I'm tired. I'm tired. We say that at our house a lot. I'm tired. Okay, I won't use that as an excuse. All right. So what does that mean? I'm tired. Well, like, yeah, there's a lot tugging at you and too much. And is there anything that can be taken away legitimately where you're not so tired?
Is it kind of like saying, I don't have enough energy for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I've said it like that. Yeah. Or I don't trust you with what I'm thinking or feeling, or yeah. Right. So, and children don't like to hear their parents say that either. If that's one of the main things you're saying around your house, I'm tired. Yeah. Okay, reason number two, again, this thing about change, but just realize it rarely happens. If you married a laid-back person who doesn't talk much and you think that they're going to be talking more as years go on, probably not. Or if they don't manage money well, or if they're messy and you think they're not going to become messy, you know, that's rare. That's rare that they're going to change that much. So here's the quote. Never go into marriage with the thought of changing each other. If you can't love and accept each other exactly as you are, strengths and weaknesses, don't get married. So you accept them, strengths and weaknesses, you know on the front end, so don't get resentful if they don't change. You bought what you bought. No, you don't say that way. You have what you have. You have what you have. And then number three, we don't talk anymore. Well, couples talk about logistics, like who's going to pick up the kids, blah, all of that. But a lot of couples, there's very little meaningful talk about really what's important. It's about who's going to get the kids, which you have to have that to maintain life, but you have to have a dose of the other too, of what is it we need to be talking about that's important, not just the details of life. And then this one is big too. Many couples are on such different schedules, and they almost have to be. I mean, as they maintain kids and everyone is going the different directions, and so they you don't see each other except in passing. So that's not a good thing. Okay, let me keep moving. Number six. Well, you already know this. We're different. And yet what I've learned at the core level, we're still wanting basically the same things. You're wanting to love and to be loved, to respect and to be respected. I mean, that doesn't change, but I've got some differences here about men as we keep going here. All right, here's what, there's several books out on the market that kind of get to this, but men need to be needed, need to be wanted, and need to be fulfilled. Like, back up, I'm sorry, Susan. Like work, for example, it's hard on a man, particularly, if their work is not fulfilling, because this need, like I want to be contributing to something in life. Okay, sorry, here we go, Susan. Number eight, women need, well, not that men don't need affection, but women need affection, open and honest communication, and to know that their husband is committed to the family. Men need that too, but women particularly. The whole affection thing, the main question they want to know in their minds is, am I loved? Would you choose me again? Am I the one? So that, if that question is not resolved in their minds, then, I mean, that's when depression starts entering into a person's life. Like, am I loved or am I not? Okay, number nine. All right, I like this one too. There's all sorts of research out there about different personality types, and they've been called different things, but let me put it like this. Like the personality type, it's called a sanguine personality, and they just want to do things the fun way. Like, let's go canoeing and kayaking this week. Let's go. They like being in a crowd. They smile a lot. They like to talk to everybody, have a good sense of humor. They can tell good stories, and they just want to go through life having fun. And there's nothing wrong with any of these, but it's like the very social personality type that spills over into marriage. Let's not clean house. Let's go canoeing down the Caney or something. Okay, this one is called the caloric personality, where they're confident, independent, adventurous, they can be strong-willed and competitive, and they want to take charge. And they do. And there's two reasons people take charge. One is just because that's just been their lifestyle. Another is sometimes defensively you feel like you're going to be hurt unless you're the one in charge. So you're taking charge for that reason. But, of course, you know, it needs to be shared. Yes. Any thoughts on this? All right. The third one is, let's do it the right way. Those are the folks that it's actually called melancholic. But it's the people, they know how a project needs to be done. Let's do it the right way. No shortcuts. Let's do all the internet research involved before we do something. They like an organization and a plan and no change particularly. And the fourth one is let's do it the easy way. That's called a phlegmatic personality. These are the people that tend to avoid conflict. They're the mediators, the peacemakers. They just want to solve the problem. They give in a lot. Let's do it the easy way. But they can also be balanced, too. But out of all of these, can you identify yourself? Can you identify your mate? But don't shout it out or something. But
can you be a combination?
Yes. And most of us are. These are not just pure, but we kind of have a tendency to swing in different directions. So I'll ask you first, does anybody see your, not, let's not talk about your mate, let's talk about you. Does anybody see yourself in any of these that you want to comment? Larry?
I like the easy way.
Me too. See, that's what I would pick.
I'm kind of 3 and 4.
You're 3 and 4?
The right and easy.
Okay, if it can be right and easy, that really works.
I really like those. I spent a lot of time in the research or the looking for how to do it.
You research how to do it right.
But I kind of get lost in that, and then I go to the easy path.
Okay, then you backtrack to the easy path. Okay. Now, I'm interested in this. What else do you see in you?
Well, I want to do it the right way. But that's kind of opposite, I would think,
yes,
for the two of us.
Well, Diane, what would you say you are? Exactly. You're this one, and I'm that one, just like they're that, yeah. So Diane pushes me to do it the right way. I just want to get it done and do it the easy way. So, yeah, there's a little conflict involved in that one from time to time. Anybody else want to share on that? Which one are you?
How about we just say, let's do it God's way. There may be.
Well, I see you're doing it the right way by bringing that up. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do it God's way. That's even better. Yes, you're right. Let's do it God's way. Okay, but then, you know, playing that out practically, you know, what does that mean exactly? Yeah. Thank you. Yes. All right. Okay, I want someone else to share on this.
Yeah, I see two women here that just do it the right way. My wife is the exact same way. I mean, if I'm doing 35 in the 30, she's telling me that that's not right.
Yes.
And it's.
I relate.
She's more of a Christian than I am. She doesn't even come to church, if you know what I mean. You know,
yeah,
it's...
Yeah. Do it the right way.
Yeah. Always, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, let me get these two others done, number 11 and number 12. Number 10, excuse me, 10, is it's helpful to figure out your mantra, like your worldview. Like, what would you say to yourself? I only count in life when... When I am what? When I'm doing what? How would you complete that? I only count in life. Mine tends to be when I'm helping people. I realize I'm a helper, and so that matters a lot to me. So if I'm not helping, then like, what am I supposed to be doing? So. You can't use mine. A lot of you are like me. I see that. You're helpers. Well, teachers, nurses, counselors, ministers, that's what they do.
Babysitters.
Yes.
Babysitter.
Yes. All right. So anybody else brave enough to share on that one? I only count when...
I'm doing things for others.
Yes, similar. I'm doing things for others. Yes. Yeah. Well, we have to look at that honestly, because that can be overdone, right? Yeah. Okay, number 11. Okay, so this is kind of self-explanatory. People tend to fall into these categories. More people than what you think are the attention seeker. There are millions of them out there where they just want to... Look at me. I want to be in the spotlight for a little bit. The controller, not fun to live with. The martyr, self-sacrificing to the nth degree and sometimes letting people know it. That can be the annoying part. The pleaser, I just want to get along. I'll give in. the carrot seeker, like what's in it for me? Why am I doing anything? What do I get out of this? The cop-out artist who tends to blame the other person, like don't, if you point out something in me that I don't like, I turn it back on you and say, well, if you weren't doing that, I wouldn't be doing this. And then this maybe is one of the most difficult. The one who's angry and will get revenge. I'm talking about in a marriage even. The angry person who would hurt you. I mean, not necessarily physically. It could be emotionally. But they'll take out their anger because you're an easy target for them. And then last, number 12. So just about feelings. So you already know this. A feeling is just a feeling. There are no right or wrong feelings. And you have a right to express your feelings. But here's the warning. But you don't always have to act on them. Just because you have a feeling doesn't mean you have to go act on the feeling. Mature people control themselves in that regard. And also, it's a good formula to follow, like to say, I feel sad, I feel excited, I feel happy, I feel whatever. And to share it, because that's what builds closeness. It's not just sharing facts. Oh, we're going to go to the movie Tuesday night. It would be more the feeling. Oh, well, I enjoyed being with Diane, and we ate popcorn, and it was a fun time, and I honored her because she wanted to do that. I mean, I would share a feeling about it, not just the fact. And the last thing, it depends how you ask this question. You can ask it with an attitude of, why do you feel that way? You know, like, you dummy. So don't do that. Or it can be an honest inquiry. Like, okay, you feel this way about it. I don't. But why do you feel that way? I'd like to know. Explain it. No judgment. I want to know, why do you feel that way? And I feel so much different the other way. And I'd try to understand it from your point of view. So, yeah, doing that with the right spirit. Okay, so time is up, I see. So another